I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. There's a story in Philadelphia that's gotten a lot of buzz among journalists involving the Philadelphia Media Network, which owns the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Philadelphia Daily News, and Philly.com. A group of well-connected investors, including former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell, is apparently interested in buying the company. Another group of investors, headed up by developer Bart Blatstein, said they too were interested in making a bid, but were shut out of the process. Dave Davies reported at WHYY's NewsWorks website that things got ugly last week when the newspaper muzzled their reporters trying to cover this story, pulling a blog from their website and reportedly threatening staffers with dismissal. We asked Dave Davies to join us on Radio Times. He's a senior reporter for WHYY, fill-in host for Fresh Air with Terry Gross. He was a reporter and columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News for 19 years, also City Hall Bureau Chief for KYW News Radio, and City Hall correspondent for WHYY. And he blogs at Dave Davies Off Mic at newsworks.org. And Dave, always a pleasure. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be back, Marty.
And on the telephone is Rick Edmonds. He's media business analyst for the Poynter Institute, writes the Biz blog at Poynter Online, co-author of the newspaper's chapter of State of the News Media, which is published by the Project for Excellence in Journalism. In fact, was a reporter and editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer from 1977 to 1982. And Rick Edmonds, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. Good to be with you, and thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely. And let me also say that we did invite Greg Osberg to join us, a Philadelphia Media Network Chief Executive Officer and Publisher. We received an email yesterday saying they appreciated the offer and were unable to participate, or he was unable to participate. Dave, let me begin with you. We'll take this story apart, but I have a basic question for you to get things started here. Why is this story important?
Because it really goes to the question of whether we can count on the region's largest media organization, which publishes two daily papers and Philly.com, to do its job of being fair, thorough, and accurate. And what we've seen over the past 10 days are repeated and unconscionable breaches of journalistic practice, where they, in a sense, bent the news to cover the financial interests of their owners, muzzled reporters, bullied, threatened reporters, removed content in ways that have left the reporters at both papers more, I think, more angry and demoralized than I've ever seen them.
Give us an example of one thing that this paper, the management at the paper did.
Well, there was
even the most egregious.
There was a series of four of them beginning a week ago Saturday. But I guess sort of the most troubling was last Tuesday, when the Daily News was prepared to run a story, a fairly innocuous, straightforward story about the fact that there was now a second and competing group of investors that were interested in buying the paper.
This is the Blatstein Group.
This is the Blatstein Group, which it's now clear that the current owners of the company are not friendly to. And the Daily News was prepared to write a story. Dave Gambacorta was assigned to write it. And after a meeting, the city editor came out and told people at the paper that the word from upstairs was that there will be no story in the next day's paper. And further, that everyone on the staff was advised that they should not consider tweeting or Facebooking or mentioning anything, any communication involving the Blatstein Group or face dismissal.
And this is unprecedented from your experience as a journalist?
I was there 20 years. I've never seen anything like it.
And Rick, let me get you in on this. And there's much to talk about. But from what Dave has said so far, what's your response?
I basically agree. It's not good journalistic practice. And I think when you're writing about yourself, you need to be especially careful to avoid the appearance, or in this case, maybe the actuality of tilting things in your favor.
And it seems to me it's always difficult for a newspaper or a media organization to write about itself. Would you say that's true, Rick?
Oh, absolutely. And this has been true for as long as I've been an adult, with newspapers covering their own labor problems, which New York Times, Philadelphia Inquirer, Boston Globe have all had those. And financial health and the possible sale is obviously also very sensitive.
Because who owns a paper is important.
Yes, it is, and you know it's important what tone they set, what the understanding is among the investors as to whether they'll have any say in what runs in the paper or not, and you know that That can be very good some places, and it can be compromised others. There are a number of examples of both out there right now.
I'll get back to that. But, Dave, let me get back to you. And you obviously have a lot of contacts at these papers because you've been a journalist in the city for a long, long time. You talk about angry reporters. What, angry reporters and editors?
Oh, yeah. The reason I knew about this is that I got a call on Tuesday from people who were just awestruck, thunderstruck, furious at what was happening. I mean, there was a whole series of events of the owners of the papers intervening in a very heavy-handed way to kill stories, to remove things from the web. And these reporters are angry, and so they have called me. They've given me some internal communications. This is all on my blog on newsworks.org, right. But, for example, you can see a copy of the planned story list for the Inquirer for last Tuesday, at which there was clearly a story to be written about the Blatstein Group, which never appeared.
And they called you why? I mean, why do you think you've been the contact for this story?
Well, because I think they realized that the papers weren't going to cover themselves. I mean, they weren't going to report on their own breaches of journalistic ethics, and they weren't going to fairly and accurately report on the events of the sale, and they didn't know where else to turn. They knew me and trusted me, and they knew that I had the outlet of WHYY and Newsworks.org.
Rick, let me go back to you, and as I think you indicated earlier, there's nothing new, I guess, about the tension between management, ownership, reporters, and editors. Would that be a fair assessment?
Sure, I think so.
And there is this firewall that is supposed to exist at news organizations. Help us understand the role that firewall plays.
Well, I think the firewall is a traditional concept that's coming under some pressure with all the economic difficulties, but basically it says that the business side tends to business, and the editorial side, the top editor and his or her deputies make the calls about what to run in the paper, and perhaps as a courtesy the editor might tell a publisher we have a controversial story coming up, but that's about the end of it in terms of influence. I think the partial exception to that now is that the business is so difficult, and there's such an urgent need for finding some new digital products and revenue streams that the business and editorial side have been brought closer together on those kinds of projects. But that really doesn't or shouldn't mean that the business side is dictating news coverage or suppressing news coverage.
But just picking on what you just said, though, that there are all these financial pressures, that there are breaches of this firewall?
I'm not sure it's cause and effect. I think one of the other consequences of the financial pressures is that there are quite a number of papers like the Inquirer that have changed hands sometimes several times. This, I guess, would be about the fifth ownership, if there is new ownership, in 5 or 6 years. And it kind of reminds me of the Lorf and Annie or Black Beauty. Some of the masters are good and kind and conscientious, and some not so much.
Interesting. David, looks like you wanted to add something.
I just wanted to add that there is sort of one traditional exception to the role of owners in influencing what happens in the papers, and that is traditionally the publisher gets the editorial page if they want it. I mean, if the publisher of the paper wants to endorse Ron Paul or Ralph Nader or favor colonizing the moon, generally that's accepted. That's the point of view of the publisher. But I think it's also – there is a well-established tradition for decades that the publisher doesn't mess with the news product. And what you want to see in a publisher, and I really want to see this in any new owners, is a commitment to hiring managers and editors at the newspapers and at Philly.com who would flat out refuse to do the kind of things that people were asked to do over the past week.
I did notice, though, Dave, in your reporting that either reporters didn't talk to you on the record or there were, I guess, more quote-unquote anonymous sources. I mean, you're getting your information from people working there, but they are, with the, I guess, exception of Stu Bykofsky, not telling you their name. Does that say that they are unprotected when there is a controversy like this?
Yeah, I think they're nervous about it. I mean, I do have one piece of documentary evidence of what happened, which is in the in the blog, and there's also a public letter from the union. But yeah, in the main, people feel very vulnerable. I will say that, one, it helps a lot to have union protection, which reporters and editors and photographers at these two papers do. The Newspaper Guild's contract does have provisions which protects their editorial independence to a degree. And in fact, there were grievances filed based on some of the things that the management did. On the other hand, folks who particularly newer, younger reporters know that while they may not be able to fire you, they can certainly mess with your assignments and work schedules. And you know, you don't want to be out of favor if you can help it.
But you mentioned that at the Philadelphia Daily News, there was, what, the threat of dismissal if there was coverage of this issue?
Yes, yes. And I've heard this from many sources who heard it firsthand, that you risk being fired. And this was Tuesday of last week. If you, even in your own private Facebook page, gives any attention to the Blatstein Group.
Rick, I find that pretty shocking. Do you?
I mean, I think it's bad practice, as I said earlier. There actually is quite a side issue going on right now about what reporters can and can't say on Twitter or Facebook. Right. And in some very different contexts, reporters have been disciplined or even dismissed for what they put on their, particularly on Twitter.
But the idea that you could, and I guess, Dave, this was coming from management saying to reporters, I mean, you cannot cover this and you cannot talk about this.
Right, right. Right. This was the city editor of the Daily News giving instructions to staff members and saying this comes from, quote, upstairs, unquote.
Right. And upstairs.
Yeah, it meant the company ownership.
It means management. Yeah. And this story, as you were telling me yesterday, has blown up, and by that I mean gotten a lot of reaction and coverage.
Yeah, well, one of the troubling things about covering this is that you realize that if there's an important story that the daily papers and their website are not covering, it's kind of hard to get attention. And what I saw when I began writing about it was that national journalism websites like Pointer and Romanesco, which are widely read by journalists around the country, began to pay attention to it. And I wasn't the first either. I mean, I actually got some information from the Romanesco side. But the point is that people who care about journalism and journalistic practice began noticing this. And I think we'll probably see a little more of that as days come. And I think that, as well as a union grievance, is what kind of embarrassed the company into finally, 3 days after the Blatstein Group announced their present, finally begin covering it as a straight news story. They've assigned a couple of reporters, and now they're doing a fairly standard, straightforward reporting job, at least on the sale. They are not covering their own transgressions of journalism.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very short break, and I do want to actually go back to you, Dave, and begin to spell out who some of these players are. But we are talking with Dave Davies, a very familiar voice here at WHYY, senior reporter at WHYY. And if you go to his blog, Dave Davies Off Mic at newsworks.org, you can follow his coverage of the Philadelphia Daily News, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and philly.com, raising a whole host of journalistic questions. Also with us is Rick Edmonds, media business analyst for the Pointer Institute. We're going to take a very short break and also take your calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, ATO's Thin Ice. Greg Kinnear stars as a desperate salesman whose encounter with an eccentric old-timer, Alan Arkin, just might change his fortune. With Billy Crudup and Leah Thompson, in theaters Friday.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen with an urgent reminder that we need your support. We must meet our winter membership goal of raising $800,000. You can help us meet that goal by making a call right now at 1-888-345-9499 or pledging online at WHYY.org. Your support plays a vital role in ensuring that we can bring you the news and information that you depend on. 1-888-345-9499, WHYY.org. Thanks so much.
Westtown School supports WHYY. Since 1799, Westtown has invited students pre-K through grade 12 to pursue a life-size education, one that helps to prepare each student for what comes next, not only for college and career, but for a whole life. You can learn more by attending Westtown's open house on Monday, February 20th at 8:30 a.m. Details at westtown.edu. Westtown School, a life-size education.
Hello, this is Margaret Kuo. To celebrate the Cherry Blossom Festival with the Japan American Society, Dr. Hamada from Villanova and I will present a tutorial luncheon in my Wayne restaurant on Sunday, February 26th. Margaret Kuo's restaurants support WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about the news, the charges that the Philadelphia Media Network, which owns the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Philadelphia Daily News, and Philly.com, has been stifling accurate reporting of a potential sale. Dave Davies actually has been covering the story, broke the story at newsworks.org. He joins us here with us here in our Philadelphia studios and on the telephone, Rick Edmonds, media business analyst for the Poynter Institute. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. All right, Dave, I want to go back and because there are two main investor groups. There's also another investor also looking at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Let's go through that sequence. And who should we start with?
Okay, well, I guess we should start with what looks like the group that's likely to win, and that's the group associated with former mayor and governor Ed Rendell. It appears that this process has been going on for some months. I mean, the current owners have been inviting expressions of interest of folks to bid. It sort of trickled out in a leak a couple of weeks ago that a group associated with Rendell was looking into the papers. He held a conference call with reporters and identified some of the main investors, some big names.
Ed Snyder,
the owner of the Flyers. George Norcross, big Democratic, powerful force in South Jersey, a businessman. And Lou Katz, former owner of the New Jersey Nets. All very big folks. Rendell said that they had submitted a non-binding expression of interest in owning the papers. He said it was governed by a confidentiality agreement, but interestingly, he volunteered that the current publisher, Greg Osberg, had done an excellent job. And a lot of folks at the papers are telling me they believe that the current publisher, Greg Osberg, favors the Rendell Group because they will keep him in his post. Mm. So that's the first group to emerge. They appear to be the leading contender.
And let me go back to you, if I could, Rick Edmonds. And it's so interesting to me that there are investor groups interested in buying newspapers these days because, as we know, newspapers are struggling. What's the attraction? What's the allure of owning a newspaper?
Well, allure is a good word because I think that for all the difficulties businesses has had, it's still a vital resource in the community. I think some people just want to see their city have a good strong newspaper, and it can be a door opener and a lot of other things. I think there's something going on, and I'm not entirely positive what it is. The prices have clearly been hammered down, but there's been much more activity in the last 3 or 4 months than there probably had been for 2 or 3 years, leaving out the bankruptcies, which is how this ownership group got control of the paper. You had Warren Buffett buying his hometown paper in Omaha, a real estate developer in San Diego buying the Union Tribune, and a couple more.
I mean, is that a kind of a vanity project, do you think? Or the notion of being, you know, locally connected, powerfully connected people that are involved in local journalism?
It could be. And it could be, in some cases, people with an agenda. I think that's one of the concerns about the Rendell Group. Do they, you know, they have so many different interests. Do they want to promote some things or have some say in how that's covered? I would say though that was a big concern when Brian Tierney's group bought the paper, and as you recall, Tierney had a big business as a very high-level PR guy, and he'd represented the Catholic Church and some others in very vigorous fashion. So they're afraid that he would favor friends and other members of his group. That really didn't happen, and he told his investors from the start that that's not how it's going to be, and I think the record showed he was pretty much true to his word.
In fact, Dave, you were at the Daily News.
I was throughout the entire Tierney era, and a lot of people did fear that Tierney would meddle with it. He was also, in addition to being a PR guy who represented the church, he was a Republican player. I mean, he was the campaign chairman for a Republican mayoral candidate before that. So a lot of folks feared that there would be interference. And my experience is, in the main, there wasn't. I mean, it's not to say that he wouldn't talk to an editor or a reporter about, hey, I think this is a good idea from time to time. But I can tell you, you know, my own personal experience, there was a point in 2009 when the company was in bankruptcy court and Tierney was fighting tooth and nail to keep it out of the hands of hedge funds to whom he owed over over $300 million. I had to write a few of the stories about that bankruptcy proceedings, and it's not an easy position to be in,
sure.
as we just said, covering
sure.
yourselves. I remember one day I went to a bankruptcy proceeding, wrote a story, and Brian Tierney was on the phone with me the following morning at 8:30, a pretty angry man because there was a detail in there that involved a meeting he had had in a secret tape recording. It was a whole dispute, and there was some detail about it that he said was just not right. Now, fortunately, I was able to tell him that my source for that detail was a court filing by one of his company's lawyers. But the real point, Marty, is Brian Tierney didn't know what was in that story until he saw it in the morning paper. It was not pre-edited. It was not ordained from on top. And in the main, that was the experience, I think.
So it's okay to yell sort of after the fact, but it's not okay to try to either prevent or shape a story before it actually ends up in the paper.
I think he, like any other source, I mean, we would call all of the various players in there, and they would advocate for their position. And in that circumstance, there's nothing wrong for a company guy, including the current company, to advocate for their position. I mean, they have a point of view.
Sure.
Like any other source, the reporter should listen. But then they have to step out of the way when it's time to have the story edited and put in the paper. Mm-hmm. There they get out of the way.
Let me go back to you, Rick, and I do want to move on because what is also interesting is this Blatstein group as well. But when you have a former governor like Ed Rendell, George Norcross, a power player in southern New Jersey, when you've got people really powerfully connected political people that are interested in buying a paper, does that raise concern from you? Are they any different from a business consortium that might be interested in a paper?
Well, I think potentially they are, but I would, from my chair, which is a fairly distant one, I'd be very hesitant to conclude that group was going to be meddlers.
Right.
They may be smart enough to see that that's really a sort of a short-sighted way to run a paper.
Right. I mean, we can't speculate too far, but Dave, what do you think? And then I do want to move on.
I think this is really the heart of the issue. I mean, Ed Rendell can't help himself. I mean, he has opinions. When I was covering him in City Hall, he would yell at me. Even though we had a good relationship,
Everyone's been yelled at by Ed Rendell.
And as full disclosure,
Ed
Rendell offered me a job 10 years ago. I actually agreed to be his press secretary. In the end, it didn't happen. But he was a guy who had a lot of opinions and didn't mind yelling at reporters. I'm told Norcross is much the same way. And from my point of view, that's okay. Right. Any owner is going to be somebody by definition rich and powerful and will have interest. The question is, will there be publishers who tell them you don't get to manage the news product? And what really concerns me is the current management of the paper has demonstrated over the past week and another incident 2 months ago that they will throw out their journalistic judgment like a sandwich wrapper if their owner's interests are involved. And what I don't want are politicians and business interests who have strong opinions hiring a publisher who will let them do whatever they want with a news product. That is a very disturbing prospect for all of us.
And just because you mentioned this was something actually that you wrote about it a couple of months ago, this having to do with the sale of the Inquirer building and the move of the organization actually to our neighborhood here.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Mr. Rosberg, the publisher, announced that the newspaper was going to leave its current offices, both papers, leave their current offices on North Broad Street, the White Tower, and move to a new location at 8th and Market. And in the company press release and in practically all of its coverage, there was no mention of the fact that there was a $2.9 million public subsidy involved. It was a $2 million loan for fitting out the space, and the city was going to pick up a $900,000 deposit that the landlord was requiring because it was a company coming out of bankruptcy.
We're talking about city government.
Talking about city government dollars. Now, there's a legitimate debate about whether or not governments ought to be subsidizing businesses, maybe an even larger debate about whether news organizations ought to accept such subsidies. And whenever the Inquirer would cover this couldn't cover any other business getting relocated with some public assistance, they would routinely report on it. Anybody would. But when it was their own business, they didn't. I wrote about this. KYW Radio wrote about this. And at some point, a week later, I said, I'm still waiting for the Inquirer editorial that says, you know, we should have reported that. Mm. We kind of didn't meet up to our obligation. And
you're still
silence.
Waiting?
I'm still waiting. Silence. And so that was a case 2 months ago where you could see this ownership, when their interests were involved, we're going to just ignore whatever journalistic standards they would have applied to others. And then we've really seen that over the past 10 days.
Rick, do you want to add anything to that or respond to that?
No, I mean, again, I think it's that's a case of shooting yourself in the foot, because in a competitive media environment, this is playing out with Dave's work and some others, these things are not going to just remain secret. And in fact, it sort of blood in the water for investigative reporters when
something like this happened.
Yeah,
but you have to learn about it. I mean, you have to do some digging. A lot of people.
Yeah, that I guess that's what's troubling, is that a lot of people didn't know, because not everybody reads what we do. To just make one more point here, what's interesting about what's happened over the past week is that this heavy-handed kind of muzzling of reporters and removing blog posts and threatening people involved the most trivial, inconsequential edge in public relations. I mean, just to prevent the public from knowing about the existence of the Blatstein Group. I mean, what difference would it really have made? They didn't have to negotiate with them. So if, when such trivial stakes are in play, they will intervene to muzzle reporters, heaven knows what they would do when something that really matters is at stake.
Well, I do want to get to the Blatstein Group, but a quick reintroduction. That's Dave Davies, senior reporter here at WHYY. You can read his blog at Dave Davies Off Mic, that's MIC, at newsworks.org. Also with us is Rick Edmonds, media business analyst for the Poynter Institute. He writes the Biz blog at Poynter Online. I do want to get to some callers, but I do want to also continue our story here. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So, Dave, let me go back to you, because what I guess created this controversy in part was that the Blatstein Group has apparently been interested in purchasing what is the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, Philly Online. I should add that part of that group is Jerry Sweeney, who is head of the board here at WHYY, also Bill Harvey, Harold Honigberg, and Andrew
Honickman,
and Andrew Barraway. So just to continue this saga here, let's fold them into the storyline.
Okay, right. So we had this 2 weeks ago. It emerged that there was this group of folks associated with Ed Rendell that the paper wrote about. We now know they were quite friendly to that group. Then the Blatstein Group, whose members you just described, emerged. They sent a press release to the Inquirer a week ago, Monday. And simply saying, we're here, these are our members, we're interested. One of the interesting things about their statement, Marty, was that in contrast to the Rendell Group, which sort of said our goal is really to make sure that we have a strong local media, that it's a force for good, the Blatstein Group's release kind of said, well, we don't think this is philanthropy. We think that there's a real business opportunity here, and we're gonna bring our expertise to make it run. But in any case, they simply announced their presence. It's now clear that one of the reasons they went public was that their efforts to get in on the bidding process were being rebuffed by the company and their Wall Street representative, a company called Evercore. But so what started this sort of current controversy that I've been reporting on was the Blatstein Group's efforts to say, hey, we're here. We want in.
Mm-hmm. And how did the paper then respond to, you know, they're wanting publicity for their bid?
Right. Well, that's the sequence of things we've detailed, and which I find so troubling. On Monday, the Inquirer initially assigned a story to be written about the Blatstein Group. They assigned Andrew Maycuth, who was a veteran reporter there, and on the blog, I have a copy of the story list for the next day, which clearly shows him being authoring a story. That story was killed. The next day, Tuesday, the Daily News got a hold of the press release, and its editor sent a copy of the press release to David Gambacorta, one of their City Hall people, and said, would you put up a little story on this? So he did what they would typically do, is to put it up on the blog first. Philly Clout is a Daily News blog that regularly runs. And it was, again, a fairly routine thing. Mm-hmm. Here's this group of investors. He had a quote from Bart Blatstein. And then the blog mysteriously disappeared. Chris Brennan, who runs the blog, thought, what happened? He put it back up. And it turned out that The company spokesman, Mark Block, had taken down the blog. He replaced it with a company statement which had less information, obscured the name of the investors, and made it clear that these folks were not negotiating with him. A little later in the day, so that's the second incident.
Right, and these sequences matter.
Right. And then a little later in the day, and this is the, kind of the most troubling one, which I just described a moment ago, the Daily News was prepared to go ahead and write a story. Again, a fairly straightforward story. Hey, there's a new group. Maybe they don't get it, but there's a group. Mm-hmm. Would have quoted Mr. Osberg or current owners of the company, kind of indicating they weren't so interested in the Blatstein Group, but they had planned to do a straightforward story. But then after a meeting, the city editor emerged and said the word from upstairs is that there will be no story, and you are not to mention this group on pain of dismissal.
Rick, going back to you and throwing a blog into our discussion here, do newspapers treat blogs differently? Are there different criteria about what gets blogged and what gets reported in print, so to speak?
I don't think it's radically different, and what I was saying earlier about Twitter and Facebook, I think the movement in the industry has been to treat communications from reporters about the news, whether it's a blog or a Twitter comment, as basically it appears to be something they're doing within their job, even if it's a personal thought. So no, I would think if you want to say suppressing a blog is the same as suppressing a story. The only possible difference is that the rules for blogs, to a certain extent, allow, as a convention, or it's not bad practice, to post what you know fairly quickly, and if there are other dimensions of the story to be checked out, do that later, because speed's kind of the essence. So sometimes there are a good blog post might be a fairly incomplete story, I guess is a short way to say it.
So it might come back with more information or some fleshing out that initial blog post. Dave, what's been the response from management?
They haven't said very much. I mean, when the blog post was taken down, that was immediately picked up by the Pointer website, the institution that monitors this stuff so well and that Rick is associated with. And the spokesman, Mark Block, gave a sort of confused explanation, sort of which the thrust of which was, well, it was only a blog post. We felt that it might mislead our readers. Therefore, we wanted to give them more accurate information, which is that we're not negotiating with this group. And when I said, well, okay, well, why would you remove information that was there? There really wasn't much of an explanation. After I wrote the stories about them killing the Andy Makuth story and threatening people with dismissal, there was no comment about any of it. However, I do know that there was a union grievance filed about some of these activities and that Block himself last Thursday actually went down to the Daily News newsroom and personally handed Dave Gambacorta, the reporter whose post he removed, the company spokesman Block, personally gave him a written apology.
Oh, interesting.
And again, that followed a union grievance, so I think that's no accident.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That very familiar voice is Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY. Fills in for Terry Gross as well. He was a reporter and columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News for 19 years, also City Hall Bureau Chief for KYW News Radio here in the city of Philadelphia. He blogs at Dave Davies Off Mic at newsworks.org. Also with us is Rick Edmonds, media business analyst for the Pointer Institute. He writes the Biz blog at Pointer Online. We're going to take a very short break, talk some more, and also get some callers in on our conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Act 2 Playhouse supports WHYY. Act 2 presents Time Stand Still by Donald Margulies. Time Stand Still follows Sarah and James, a photojournalist and foreign correspondent trying to find happiness in a world gone crazy. When their own story takes a turn, the couple confronts the prospect of a conventional life, and everything changes. Time Stand Still at Act 2 Playhouse, now through March 11th. Tickets at act2.org. That's A-C-T, the number 2.org, or 215-654-0200.
I'm Marty Moscowane. We have our work cut out for us and for you today. We have to finish our winter membership campaign so that we can pay for the programs and services that you enjoy here on WHYY. We assume that means all the interviews you hear on Radio Times. So please pick up the phone and make a call right now at 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY or pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks.
Booth Bartolozzi Balderston Orthopedics, the three B's, support WHYY. As leaders in joint replacement, sports medicine, spine, and shoulder care, the physicians provide patients with personalized care and the latest treatment options available. At Pennsylvania Hospital, the nation's first hospital. More information about Booth Bartolozzi Balderston Orthopedics, the three B's, available by phone at 800-789-PENN. 800-789-PENN.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking about a story here in Philadelphia that has generated a fair amount of coverage, certainly among journalists. It involves the Philadelphia Media Network, the owner of the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Philadelphia Daily News, and Philly.com. Just to recap, a group of investors, including former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell, apparently interested in buying the company. Another group of investors, headed up by a developer named Bart Blatstein, said they too were interested in making a bid, but were shut out of the process. And as we have been talking during this hour, Dave Davies reported at WHYY's Newswork website that things got kind of ugly last week when the newspaper muzzled some of their reporters trying to cover this issue, pulling a blog, reportedly threatening staffers with dismissal. That's our topic for today's Radio Times, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Rick, let me go back to you, and I've been thinking about this a lot in terms of how news organizations should cover themselves. Things happen at a news organization every day. Not all of it is newsworthy, and I don't think all of it is something that listeners, in the case of radio, or readers, in the case of a newspaper, need to know. How does a news organization decide what is newsworthy for the public?
Well, that is a good question, and I think your suggestion that some of the things that are very important to us as news people resonate less with the public. I've at least some sense that the killing the blog and some of the rest of it may be a bigger deal for journalists, mm-hmm. Though it is a big deal for journalists, than it is to the person in Philadelphia. But there's something very high stakes going on here, which is who's going to own this paper and how they're going to run it. And I don't think there's any question that that's a story that demands some pretty careful coverage. I think somewhat unusual position of covering the last days of the bulletin for the Inquirer, and that was an important story.
Right. But you're saying, you know, who owns a paper obviously matters, and I guess the process by which that deal is made is also important as well?
I think so, and I don't think that's been terribly well explained, certainly not by the ownership group, which, by the way, has a long record of, like most hedge funds, of not saying anything to anybody, or by other people. So, there are more chapters to play out in this, and I would think and probably hope that the actual mechanics of getting a deal done and the implications of what the new owners are going to do once they get it will sort of come to the fore.
Dave, looks like you want to add something.
I just wanted to note that Rick referred to the paper, and we're really talking about two newspapers here. I mean, the smaller of the two, the Daily News, which last year won the Pulitzer Prize for Investigative Reporting and does a terrific job covering things, politics and issues in the city. And one of the issues at stake here is whether in this transition, whether there will still be two papers.
Mm. Well, and that's obviously a question that kind of hangs over this conversation. Let me get a couple of callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We have Bill from Belmont Hills, joining us on Radio Times.
My call.
Go ahead, Bill.
Okay. I think it's really an important topic, and I'm glad you're covering it. But I think there's a little hypocrisy going on here. I have never heard either of you talk about internal issues at WHYY. I've never heard anybody talk about Bill Morazzo, the CEO's salary of over $400,000, which is equal to 8,000 pledges of $50 each. I haven't heard – I read about that in Philadelphia Magazine. I read about that in the Philadelphia Inquirer. I read about that in the Business Journal. But I've never heard it talked about on WHYY. So, I think it's kind of like people in glass houses – shouldn't throw stones. It would be great if all media covered themselves thoroughly and honestly, but I don't see it happening.
Well, no, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and to be honest with you, and as you've heard during our discussion here, it's something I think we all as journalists who work for organizations struggle with and try to figure out, well, you know, what is newsworthy? How do we report it? What is our role in the reporting? And Dave, do you want to add something to that?
Well, you know, I wasn't here when, I guess 2 or 3 years ago, there was a series of reports about our CEO, Bill Morazzo's salary. I know that it's since come down, which is not as widely known. And I think there's a fair question to be raised there. I will note that in the time that I was here, we did do reporting about some of the arguably improper uses of tens of millions of dollars at the Delaware River Port Authority to support nonprofits that weren't part of the core mission of that organization. And we regularly reported that WHYY had been a recipient of those funds. I mean, I think it is a fair point. The other thing I will just say that I don't think it's entirely analogous, because I'm not criticizing the importance for the Inquirer and Daily News for not covering every development within their papers. What we're talking about is them covering the potential sale of a large, prominent employer in the city. If it were Blue Cross, if it were another large employer, they would cover it. It wouldn't be on the front page necessarily, but they would cover it. Mm. And what we've seen here is this heavy-handed muzzling of any coverage of what would otherwise normally occur in the course of their coverage.
Now, Rick, anything you want to add to what we've been saying?
Well, I think a point that hasn't come up that is certainly interesting to speculate about is so what is going on with closing the bidding to the and not including the Blatstein group, or we haven't talked about the Perlman group either. Mm-hmm. And my best guess is that as Dave has suggested, they're fairly well down the road with the Rendell Group, and probably see them as a well-qualified buyer who's willing to pay a good price. And reopening the bidding at this stage would prolong that by several months. So it's a little bit analogous to somebody makes you a great offer on your house, and you know you don't necessarily want to sit around for 2 or 3 months and let the deal cool while you hear a lot of other offers.
I know that you sent an email, I guess had some email questions that you wanted to, or you sent to Ed Rendell.
Right, I did. I mean, and I'll just say, I mean, as Rick said, I mean, they have a right to sell the company to the Rendell Group for a box of chocolates if they want. Just the important thing is that we know that we will have people running the news organizations that believe in sound principles of journalism. Yeah, and as I said, I think a critical question is if the Rendell Group is going to get control of this company, who will run it? Mm-hmm. Who will be guiding the journalism? And if that's going to be Greg Osberg. Now, I have to say, I've met him a couple of times. Some people in the company have told me of nice things he has done, but he has presided over this travesty of journalism over the past, 2 months. And unless he can give a credible explanation for why he's not responsible, I think you got to assume this guy is bad news for journalism. And so,
that's a strong statement, Dave.
Yeah, I do. I'm open to him explaining, giving us another explanation. We invited him on the show. I mean, I've asked for an interview. If somebody other than him is responsible for these, these unconscionable breaches, then let us hear it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I got to figure this is not a guy I want running news organizations in this town. Mm. So last Friday, I sent a letter to an email to Ed Rendell saying, you've said nice things about Osberg. Do you still stand by that? Do you think you can credibly assure with him in the helm that these would not be mouthpieces for special interests like yours and Norcross and others? And will you keep him? And I said, I'm going to report on your response whether you reply or not. It took him until about midday Monday I got an email saying he, by virtue of a confidentiality agreement, cannot comment. Mm-hmm. Although I will note that in his conference call with reporters 2 weeks ago, he volunteered that Osberg had done a great job.
And that's Dave Davies, senior reporter here at WHYY. Also with us, Rick Edmonds, media business analyst for the Poynter Institute, writes the Biz blog at Poynter Online. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
And another interesting and provocative edition of Radio Times it has been. Hi, I'm Chris Satula, Vice President for News and Civic Dialogue at WHYY. And like Dave Davies, a refugee from the big white building on North Broad Street, where the Inquirer and Daily News are located. But that's not our topic right now. We've had a great discussion this morning about some issues in the media, but I'm here with Jeff Bundy, our acting membership director, to talk about another issue in media, which is how we sustain, carry forward the kind of great discussion and civil talk and interesting talk that Marty Moscowen brings you every weekday from 10 until noon. An amazing performance by Marty and her team, which happens only because of you, because of your support. So we're back here on Valentine's Day talking to you one more time about what we'd love for you to do to show your support for what we do here at WHYY. The way to do it is to call 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY, or you can always make a donation safely, securely online at whyy.org. And today, Jeff, kind of a difficult topic to take on, but Marty's taking it on with her usual aplomb.
Absolutely. I think we actually got a comment here kind of touching upon that same idea. It's from Anne from Ridley Park, and it says, I've been a faithful listener slash member for years. I'm captivated with the range of Marty Moscowen. She handles every subject intelligently and with dignity, even when she needs to play referee. And I think that this interview we just came out of is a really good example of that. So, you know, Chris mentioned we are here on Valentine's Day. I wanted to say real quickly that we are, you know, coming from Pledge Central, we have balloons up to decorate for Valentine's Day, but also to celebrate the birthdays of two people who were actually in that last interview. Dave Davies and Marty Moscowen are both celebrating their birthday today. They've both hosted Radio Times. They've both also hosted Fresh Air, which is even more interesting because today is also Terry Gross's birthday. So if you're not going to call and give us a pledge of support around our journalistic intent, please give us a call and give a birthday gift, as it were, to Terry, Marty, and Dave Davies.
Yeah, and that gift would be really appreciated by Dave because we had a big discussion about this in the newsroom. People wanted to bring in some food for Dave on his birthday, but Dave's in the middle of a very, very strong performance on the South Beach diet. So most of the usual pastries and goodies were just off limits for Dave. So what he'd really like, I think I can speak for him, is to know that you're calling in or you're going online to whyy.org to let us know how much you appreciate what happens on Radio Times every day at 90.9 on your radio dial from noon, from 10 to noon. The way to do that is to call 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY or online at WHYY.org.
And when can you give a gift to someone else, but then also you get to take the present home? We have, as our way of saying thank you for your support, if you can become a member at the $240 level, we have what's called the last day special, because this is, we hope to be, well, actually, no, this is the last day that we're coming live to you during this, our winter membership campaign. If you can make a donation of just $20 a month, that's $240 for the year, we will send you the I Heard It on NPR a WHYY mug, the WHYY grocery bag, and the WHYY umbrella. We have a goal during this hour of raising $5,000, which will keep us on track to ending the campaign today. You can make it happen by giving us a ring at 888-345-9499 or visiting us online at whyy.org.
You know, Jeff, that coincidence of the birthdays is something we, you know, we're used to, but it's always worth remarking. Think about it. Marty Moscowen, Terry Gross, and Dave Davies, all born on the same day. But the other piece of that that is worth thinking about is they're all here together, working in the same newsroom, in the same studios. It's not just a coincidence of birthdays. It's a real connection and collaboration of amazingly talented people. People who not only bring enormous gifts in terms of being on the air, but bring enormous gifts in terms of research and reporting and analytical ability and also staying power. It's not just their birthday, but this year is also the 25th anniversary of Radio Times being on the air with Marty Moscowen and the 25th anniversary of Terry Gross being on NPR. Right. All things worth celebrating, worth showing your love for at 1-888-345-9499.
I'm happy to report we have $1,300 towards our $5,000 mini goal for this hour, which is great, but we certainly have a good amount of work to do with just over 5 minutes left. So please do take the time now to make a pledge of support to WHYY by calling 1-888-345-9499. As I mentioned, we have the last day special thank you gift, which is for a donation of $20 per month, which includes the I Heard It on NPR mug, the WHYY grocery bag, and the WHYY umbrella. But that's just one of many, many thank you gifts that we have available. So when you call in to make your pledge of support, ask the volunteers from our group, it's Resources for Human Development. Ask them, you know, what thank you gifts we have, and they'll give you a better idea of what your pledge of support would entitle you to. And, you know, I'd like to stress that, you know, you're not calling in to buy the umbrella. You're not calling in to buy the tote bag. While they are very nice, you know, they're more just tokens of our appreciation. Your money goes towards supporting programs like this. More than half of WHYY's budget comes from individual members who donate $50, $100, $200 a year. So we now have $1,700. So I think probably two or three people called in during these last couple minutes. You can be the next one at 888-345-9499.
You know, Jeff, programs like Radio Times and Fresh Air and the kind of work Dave Davies does for us in our newsroom don't just happen. You know, it doesn't happen automatically. There's a lot of hard work involved. There's a lot of research. You know, when Marty Moscoyne has somebody who's authored a book mm-hmm. on her air, she reads every page of that book. Yeah. And not every talk show in America, host in America, does that.
I'm always amazed to see the number of books that Marty and Terry are carrying around.
Right. Right. And, you know, somebody once asked Terry or Marty, well, how do you read all those books? And their mm-hmm. answer was, well, you read all those books.
Right.
On the train at home, you know, sort of going, to her husband at night as she sits there plowing through a book for a show a few days hence. That is an enormous amount of dedication and work, and it's matched by Marty's producers who work just as hard as she does to really get that variety of topics that the person who wrote in earlier that you read on the air mentioned, that scope and the variety and the diversity of things that Marty handles so adeptly. Thank you for that call. And we're just looking on this Valentine's Day and on this birthday for Marty, for Terry, for Dave, to show appreciation and support and a belief that it's really important that they stay in those chairs and keep doing what they're doing for as long as they're willing and able. And if you believe that, if you want to support that goal, if you want to show them how much you appreciate the work they've done over the years, 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY. Or you can go online, where Dave shines frequently, mm-hmm. at WHYY.org.
Right. We have $2,200 in towards our $5,000 mini goal, which is fantastic, but we do need to pick up the pace a bit. We have 3 minutes left till the end of this hour, so please do give us a call now at 888-345-9499. This is our last day of the winter membership campaign, the last day that we're going to be broadcasting live during these programs. We're going to get back to get back to covering the stories that are important to help shape your life. So we need you to show your support now during this hour of Radio Times, because frankly, this is the last time you're going to be able to make a pledge around the 10 o'clock hour. So please do now at 888-345-9499. Help us to wrap this thing up so that we can move on to, like I was saying, to covering the news and stories that help to shape your life.
Folks, I would really love to walk about 30 feet away from the studio where Jeff and I are sitting right now, walk back into the newsroom and be able to tell Dave and Marty when they come out of finishing up Radio Times for today that it was a great